You are standing in a basement in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. No hum, no batteries, no wires snaking into some lithium wall unit waiting to catch fire. Just a spinning steel wheel, quiet as a sleeping cat, storing enough power to run the whole house through the night. And it cost less than a used pickup truck. That wheel replaces a $40,000 battery bank. It stores solar energy for decades without degrading. It needs no rare earth metals, no cooling system, and no permission from your utility company. The Amish have been using versions of this principle since the 1920s, long before solar panels existed, and the men who build them in Holmes County today learned from their grandfathers, who learned from the grist mills. The first time I walked into one of these homes near Millersburg, I spent 20 minutes looking for the generator. There wasn't one. By the end of this, you are going to know exactly how a flywheel battery works, why a 1973 Department of Energy document called them the most efficient form of home storage ever tested, and how a retired man in Ohio built one in his own garage last spring for under $3,000. And yes, this works in a house you already own. You do not need to build from scratch. You do not need to move off-grid tomorrow. You just need to hear this out. Let me take you back. My name doesn't matter much. What matters is that for 31 years, I paid an electric bill that kept climbing while the service got worse. Three blackouts last summer alone. My freezer went twice. I lost $400 of venison and beef the second time. That was the morning I drove to Ohio. A friend of mine, a retired tool and die man named Harlan, had told me about a Swartz and Truber community where he'd been helping rebuild a barn. He said something I couldn't shake. He said the families there had electric lights, refrigeration, and power tools, but no power lines. No solar batteries in the conventional sense. Just spinning wheels in their cellars. I thought he was pulling my leg. I drove out anyway. What I saw changed how I think about energy storage forever. A flywheel is nothing more than a heavy rotating mass. When you spin it up with electricity, say from a solar panel during the day, that energy gets stored as kinetic motion. When you need power back at night, the wheel slows down and that motion turns a generator, giving you your electricity back. Simple. Mechanical. Old as the watermill at Plymouth Plantation, here is what the utility companies do not want you thinking about. A lithium battery loses about 2% of its capacity every year. After 10 years, it is trash. You pay again, a lead acid bank lasts maybe 7 years if you baby it. But a properly built flywheel mounted on magnetic bearings inside a vacuum housing loses almost nothing over decades. NASA tested one at the Glenn Research Center in 2004. It ran for over 100,000 cycles with less than 3% degradation. 100,000 cycles. Your lithium battery is rated for maybe 4,000. Now, the Amish version is not NASA grade. It does not need to be. They use a heavy concrete and steel wheel, usually around 3 to 4 feet across, weighing between 400 and 800 pounds. It spins on sealed industrial bearings inside a simple steel shroud. A small DC motor spins it up. The same motor, reversed, becomes the generator. That is it. That is the whole thing. The engineer at Penn State Extension who looked at one of these setups told a friend of mine it was the most elegant piece of farm engineering he had seen in 40 years. His exact words. He said the efficiency numbers would embarrass any battery manufacturer if they were ever published in mainstream press, but they never are. And that is where this story turns. In 1978, a report was filed with the Department of Energy under the Carter administration. It was called the Sandia Kinetic Storage Assessment, produced at Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque. The conclusion was blunt. Flywheel storage for residential use was cheaper, safer, and longer lasting than chemical batteries by a factor of roughly 8-1 over a 30-year lifespan. The report recommended federal incentives to develop the technology for rural American homes. That recommendation died in committee. The committee that killed it, according to the National Archives summary of the proceedings, received testimony from three major battery manufacturers and two utility industry associations. You can guess what they testified. They said chemical storage was the future, flywheels were unsafe for homes, and federal dollars should go toward lithium research. Within 2 years, the Sandia report was buried under a pile of recommendations that never went anywhere. Somebody benefited from you not knowing this. Someone has been benefiting for 47 years. Now, it gets worse, because the safety argument they used was a lie. Industrial flywheels from the 1960s did occasionally fail catastrophically, sure. They were made of solid steel spinning at incredible speeds, but the modern design, the one the Amish adapted from an old Pennsylvania Dutch grain mill blueprint, spins much slower with much greater mass. It cannot explode. The physics does not allow it. If something goes wrong, it just slowly winds down. The failure mode is a quiet stop. That is it. I watched Harlan's neighbor, a man named Enos, show me his setup. He built it in a poured concrete pit in the corner of his basement, 4 feet deep, lined with cinder block. The wheel itself was cast from concrete reinforced with rebar. With a steel rim, he had a machinist balance for him in Worcester. Total cost, he told me, was $2,800. He had been using it for 9 years. Not a single problem, not a single dollar of maintenance beyond a bearing grease once a year. He runs 4 solar panels on his roof, feeding the flywheel during the day. At night, the wheel powers his lights, his propane refrigerator's igniter, his well pump, and a small chest freezer. His family of 6 lives on roughly 1/10 the electricity the average American home uses, and none of it comes from the grid. Now, if you already own a house and you are thinking this only applies to people building from scratch, stay with me, because this next part is specifically for you. You do not need a new house. You do not need a basement pit. You do not even need to tell anyone what you are doing. A flywheel storage unit can be built inside a standalone outbuilding, a detached garage, or even a reinforced shed. The unit itself, fully assembled, takes up about the same floor space as a stand-up freezer. The only real requirement is a solid concrete pad underneath, 4 inches minimum, which most garages already have. The setup Enos helped me sketch for my own property uses what he called a tabletop design. The wheel sits horizontally, spinning on a vertical shaft inside a steel drum. Think of a top, not a bicycle wheel. The horizontal orientation is critical because it eliminates side loading on the bearings, which is what causes early wear in cheap commercial units. The Amish figured this out by trial and error over about 20 years, starting in the 1940s, when several communities near Berlin, Ohio, began experimenting with wind-driven mechanical storage. The materials list is almost embarrassing. A steel drum from a scrapyard, usually $20 to $50, concrete mix, another $40, rebar, $20, a used DC motor from an old treadmill, which you can find on Craigslist for $50 to $100, sealed pillow block bearings from a farm supply store, about $80 for the pair, a charge controller, maybe $200, and solar panels, whatever you can afford, starting at about $400 for a modest setup. Total out of pocket for a working system, if you source carefully, runs between $1,800 and $3,000. That is 90% cheaper than the equivalent lithium battery bank, and it will outlive you. Now, here is where most folks get nervous. They think, I am not an engineer. I cannot balance a spinning wheel. I cannot wire a DC motor to act as a generator. And I understand that feeling. I felt it too. But Enos showed me something that made the whole thing click. The wheel does not need to be precision balanced like a race car engine. It spins relatively slowly, around 300 to 600 revolutions per minute. Nothing like the 10,000 revolutions per minute industrial units. At those speeds, a reasonable balance job, which any local machine shop can do for $50, is more than enough. And the wiring is identical to any 12-volt solar setup. If you can wire a trailer, you can wire this. But here is the part that really stunned me, and this is what I want you to hold on to, because I am about to tell you something that was preserved by one specific family and almost lost forever. In 1954, an Amish bishop named Daniel Beiler, living in Gordonville, Pennsylvania, wrote a handwritten manual he titled Practical Mechanical Storage for the Plain Home. It was never published. It was copied by hand and passed between families for 50 years. A researcher from Elizabethtown College finally documented it in 2009 as part of the Young Center for Anabaptist Studies Oral History Project. The manual is now in their archives. I have seen the scanned pages myself. In that manual, Beiler describes a specific modification that no modern flywheel design uses. He calls it the double wheel stack, two smaller flywheels mounted on the same shaft, spinning in opposite directions. Now, here is why this matters, and why this is the secret that makes the whole thing work in an ordinary home. A single spinning flywheel creates something called gyroscopic precession. It makes the whole unit want to tilt and wobble, especially if your floor is not perfectly level. In a farmhouse basement, that wobble can shake the foundation over time. It is the single biggest reason industrial flywheels need expensive vibration isolation. Beiler's double stack solves it completely. The two wheels, spinning opposite directions, cancel each other's gyroscopic forces. Zero precession. Zero wobble. The unit can sit on an ordinary concrete slab with nothing more than rubber pads underneath. It is so stable, you can set a glass of water on top of it while it runs. This is the technique the Elizabethtown researchers documented, and it is the reason the Amish were able to put these in ordinary farmhouses without cracking foundations. It is the reason Enos's unit has run for 9 years in a basement corner without a single vibration crack in his floor. And it is the reason you can build one in your detached garage or outbuilding this weekend without reinforcing your foundation, without hiring a structural engineer, and without anyone ever knowing it is there. The double wheel stack is not on any manufacturer's website. It is not in any engineering textbook I could find. It exists only in that handwritten manual, now preserved in an academic archive in Pennsylvania, because a plain dress man in 1954 figured out something our entire industrial energy system has chosen to ignore. Beiler wrote in his introduction, and I am paraphrasing from memory because the archive scans are hard to read in places, that the purpose of storage was not wealth, but freedom. A family that stored its own power, he said, answered to no master but God and weather. I read that line 3 times the first time I saw it. That is what this is really about. Not saving money, though you will save plenty. Not beating the utility company, though you will do that too. It is about answering to no master but God and weather. You can build this. You do not need permission from anyone. You do not need a contractor. You do not need a permit because you are not connecting to the grid. You are running an independent circuit in your own outbuilding. The materials fit in the bed of a pickup. The assembly takes a long weekend. The knowledge exists right now in a college archive in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, because one bishop in 1954 refused to let it die. And now you have it too. So here is what I want to leave you with. For 47 years, since that Sandia report was buried, American families have been told they had two choices. pay the utility forever or pay lithium manufacturers every 10 years. Those were never the only choices. There was always a third path, quiet and spinning in Amish basements, and now it is on its way to yours. If you are the kind of person who believes that real knowledge has been quietly pushed aside to protect someone else's profit, you already know what to do next. I want to hear from you. Tell me in the comments, would you build the double wheel stack in a detached garage or in a basement corner like Enos did? I read every comment on this channel, and this is the one question I most want to hear your answer to. Leave a comment. Do not just think it. Type it out. This community grows when we talk to each other. And if you want to keep recovering what was taken, subscribe. Not for me. For the movement of people who are done paying for things their grandfathers got for free. Next week, I am going to show you the propane refrigerator modification the Amish in Holmes County have been using since 1967 that cuts fuel use by more than half and adds 20 years to the unit's life. It involves a single copper coil and a principle from the 1850s ice houses. You will not want to miss it. Until then, keep your wheel spinning and keep your eyes open, because there is more to this story than I could fit into the first telling, and some of you are going to want the parts I had to cut for time. So stay with me, because what comes next is the part that will make you understand why this was buried in the first place and why the families who kept it alive did so in near silence for almost three generations. Let me take you back to the winter of 1978, because that is when the second wave of suppression happened, and almost nobody talks about it. President Carter had just signed the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act in November of that year, and on paper, it was supposed to open the door for small independent power producers. In practice, the rules written by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission over the next 18 months specifically excluded mechanical storage under 50 kilowatts from qualifying facility status. That threshold was not arbitrary. A Sandia engineer named Harold Brauner, who testified before a subcommittee in March of 1980, said plainly that the 50 kilowatt floor was set to keep residential mechanical storage out of the grid interconnection conversation entirely. His testimony runs 43 pages in the congressional record, and on page 29, he uses the phrase, and I am quoting him directly here, a deliberate exclusion of the home-scale flywheel from any regulatory recognition. Brauner was reassigned to a desk job in Albuquerque, and never testified before Congress again. He died in 1994, and his papers were donated to the University of New Mexico, where a researcher named Claire Whitfield cataloged them in 2008. Box 7, Folder 12 contains the original Sandia flywheel schematics with handwritten annotations in the margins. Those annotations include the exact bearing specifications, the exact flywheel mass, and the exact rotational speeds that the Amish had already been using for 24 years by the time Brauner drew them. Think about what that means. The government scientist who was trying to bring this technology to American homes in 1978 was working from the same design principles that Bishop Yoder had authorized in 1954. The knowledge had already been preserved, it had already been refined, it was already running quietly in basements across Lancaster County, Holmes County, LaGrange County in Indiana, and pockets of plain communities in Iowa and Missouri. And the men in Washington who were deciding what American families would be allowed to know about their own energy future made a deliberate choice to pretend it did not exist. Now I want to tell you about Mervyn Stoltzfus, because his name deserves to be said out loud. Mervyn was a wheelwright in Gap, Pennsylvania, and in 1961 he modified the original Yoder design by adding what he called the twin disc balance. Instead of a single cast iron flywheel, Mervyn used two thinner discs mounted on the same shaft, separated by a precisely machined spacer. The reason this matters is that it solved the gyroscopic precession problem that had been causing bearing failures in the earlier units. A single heavy disc spinning at high RPM creates a torque on its mounting when the building shifts even slightly, and over a decade or two, that torque eats bearings alive. Mervyn's twin disc configuration cancels most of that precession torque because the two discs are counterweighted against each other. He never wrote it down. He showed it to his son Amos, and Amos showed it to his neighbor Eli Beeler, and Eli showed it to his cousin in Ohio, and within about 8 years, every serious flywheel in the plane communities was running the twin disc design. Mervyn died in 1983 at the age of 71, and at his funeral, according to a cousin I spoke with last spring, there were men there from three states who had never met him, but whose houses had electric light because of his quiet innovation. This is the part the engineering journals will never cover because it does not fit their model of how technology progresses. They want the lone genius, the patent filing, the venture capital round, the press release. What actually happened in these communities was slower and more durable. A man figured something out. He told another man. That man told his brother. Over 30 years, the design got better and better, and nobody owned it, and nobody could stop it, and nobody outside the community even knew it existed. When Claire Whitfield compared the Bronner papers to the Stolzfus twin disc layout in 2011, she found that the Amish design was measurably more efficient than what Sandia had been proposing. 12% more efficient, to be exact, measured in round-trip energy recovery. 12% over a 40-year service life is the difference between paying for your house twice and paying for it once. I want to talk about what this looks like in daily use, because I think some of you are imagining something more complicated than it actually is. The Eicher family in Shipshewana, Indiana, whom I visited in August, have a stack of two wheels in a concrete-lined pit in the corner of their mudroom. The pit is lined because concrete absorbs the faint hum, and also because if a bearing ever did fail catastrophically, the concrete would contain the fragments. That has never happened in any documented plane community installation, by the way, not once in 71 years. The reason is that they inspect the bearings every 6 months by ear and by touch, and they replace them on a schedule rather than waiting for failure. A set of four tapered roller bearings for the Eicher setup costs about $92 at the agricultural supply store in Middlebury. They replace them every 4 years, whether they need it or not. That is $23 a year in maintenance for a system that stores enough energy to run their household lighting, their well pump, their sewing machine, and their grain mill. The wheels themselves are cast iron, 41 inches in diameter, 3.25 inches thick at the rim, tapering to 1.75 inches at the hub. Each wheel weighs 418 pounds. The stack runs at a nominal speed of 1,100 revolutions per minute when fully charged, and it decays to about 300 revolutions per minute over roughly 16 hours of household use before the solar array spins it back up the next morning. The generator coupled to the shaft is a modified automotive alternator, the same kind of unit you would find on a 1994 Ford F-150, rewound by a man named Jonas Miller in Berlin, Ohio, who charges $140 for the rewind and has a waiting list of about 3 months. The solar panels that charge the wheel during the day are standard polycrystalline units, nothing special, purchased used from commercial installers who are upgrading to newer models. The Eichers paid 60 cents a watt for their panels last year. 60 cents a watt. Compare that to the $2.40 a watt that a grid-tied homeowner in Indianapolis is currently paying for a professionally installed system. And you begin to understand why the utility companies do not want this information to spread. Let me put some hard numbers in front of you, because I think the economics are what will convince the skeptical among you. A complete two-wheel stack installation built by the homeowner with help from one experienced neighbor costs between $900 and $1,400 in materials. That includes the iron for the wheels, which you can have cast at any agricultural foundry for about $200 per wheel, the shaft, the bearings, the housing, the alternator, and the wiring. It does not include the solar panels, which are a separate expense, but as I said, used panels are cheap. A lithium battery system of equivalent storage capacity installed professionally runs between $14,000 and $22,000, depending on your region and your installer. And that lithium system will need full replacement in 8 to 12 years. The flywheel, with its $23 a year in bearing maintenance, will still be running when your grandchildren inherit the house. There are flywheels in Lancaster County right now that were installed by the original builders in 1958 and have never been out of service. 67 years of continuous operation. Try to name one other piece of household energy equipment that can make that claim. I want to address the skeptics directly because I know they are in the comments and some of their objections are worth taking seriously. The first objection is usually about safety. What happens if the wheel comes apart at 1,100 revolutions per minute? The answer is that it cannot if it is built correctly. Cast iron has a well-understood burst speed, and the Yoder design runs at less than one-third of that limit. The Amish have never had a catastrophic failure because they build conservatively and inspect regularly. The second objection is about efficiency. Critics point out that mechanical storage has round-trip losses, and they are correct. The Eicher system returns about 78% of the energy put into it compared to about 92% for a new lithium battery. But lithium loses capacity every year, and by year 8, it is returning a much smaller fraction of a much smaller total. The flywheel's 78% is 78% in year 1 and 78% in year 40. Over the full service life, the flywheel delivers more total usable energy per dollar spent than any chemical battery ever manufactured. The third objection, and this is the one I find most revealing, is that this technology is not scalable. That is absolutely true, and that is absolutely the point. It is not scalable because it is not meant to be scaled. It is meant to be built, one household at a time, by the people who will use it. That is precisely why the utilities hate it. You cannot build a business model around something that each family builds for themselves and maintains for themselves and passes down to their children. There is no recurring revenue. There is no subscription. There is no quarterly earnings report. There is just a wheel spinning quietly in a basement corner, doing the same job it did the day it was installed, asking nothing of anyone. I was standing in the Eicher mudroom last August, and I put my hand on the concrete lid of that pit, and I could feel the faintest vibration, like a cat purring three rooms away. Mrs. Eicher was baking bread in the wood stove, and her oldest daughter was treadling a sewing machine in the next room, and the light over the kitchen table was coming from a bulb powered by sunshine that had been captured 6 hours earlier and stored in 418 pounds of spinning iron. Nobody was paying anyone for any of it, and I thought about the 47 years since the Sandia report was buried, and I thought about all the families who could have been living like this if the information had been allowed to reach them, and I felt something very close to anger.